Welcome along to this bite-sized edition of Tax and Lunch. Thanks for joining me. I'm Vincent Licciardi. You're listening to the podcast for tax advisors to high net worth individuals, wealthy family groups, and private clients. I'm really excited that you're joining me for this episode. Don't forget to subscribe and share this podcast with your team so they can also gain the inside perspective. Let's listen in. What I'd like to step you through today is really the way I approach preparing trust resolutions. I'd like to give you a couple of examples of things that I've seen, even in the past couple of days, that have surprised me. But I'd like to step you through how I do it, the sort of things that I look for, and hopefully then you can adopt some of that in your own practices or as you're preparing or even looking over trust deeds for your clients. The first point, and it seems very obvious, we often will speak about it when we discuss trust deeds, but is to read the deed and read it comprehensively. A couple points in this regard before we get into the detail of the income resolutions. Ask your clients whether they have a complete executed copy of the deed and all variations. Absolutely critical. I've seen, even in the last month or so, what's been provided to me is an unsigned electronic version or even versions that are many, many, many years old, unsigned. Variations unsigned, variations that even, for example, it's not clear whether the trustee had the power to make those variations in the first place. So crucial to determine you have all of the trust documents in the first place. Has the deed vested? Sometimes the date that is usually in the schedule of the deed may not actually be what is in most cases 50 years from when or 80 years from when the deed is established. I have seen cases where a trust has been determined or decided to vest when someone dies, for example, the patriarch or matriarch dies or the settlor dies and the trust at that point is scheduled to vest. So just keep an eye on that as well. Is the trustee of the trust? And this can sometimes happen if clients don't pay their annual ASIC corporate trustee fees and ASIC just decides at some point to deregister the corporate trustee. You then end up making decisions outside of power that are not authorized by the deed because the trustee has actually been deregistered. So confirm that the trustee you're actually dealing with is the trustee of the trust. Who are and are not beneficiaries? I'm surprised by the number of circumstances where the proposed beneficiaries that the accountant would like to distribute to, that beneficiary or that person is not actually a beneficiary of the trust. This can sometimes happen with blended families, ex-spouses, stepchildren, for example. So absolutely crucial to determine who is and is not a beneficiary. When must the particular trustee exercise their power? It's not always 30 June or before 30 June. It may actually be, and I've seen it before, the 25th of June, for example, or the 20th of June. If you have not followed the deed in that regard, you may find that you have an accumulation, no beneficiary made presently entitled, and therefore a 99 or 99A assessment, causing your client significant tax consequences. I won't touch on the last couple because they're by and large what we will work through today. A couple of things, if your clients have family trusts where they have purchased property, for example, have they excluded particular beneficiaries that may be foreign beneficiaries? That as clients, spouses, children move overseas, move back to Australia, you may find from time to time certain persons move in and out of being a beneficiary of a trust. Madison, if I could get you, thank you. That's great. Now, I just want to give you this very practical example. This is an extract from a trustee that I've been working on for a client over the last few days. I'm not going to read the terms of this particular deed. I'll be circulating the slides for you, so that's fine. But I just want to bring your attention. This is a clause I've actually never seen in a deed before. this particular clause required the trustee to prepare a list of beneficiaries. So not just a minute, an income minute, but a list of beneficiaries, the name of beneficiary, the proportion of income, the financial year, that list had to be signed by the trustee. But the reason why I put the last box or the last paragraph in a box there is because the deed actually says that if the list is not prepared, then no beneficiary is presently entitled to the income of the trust. I don't know why this is, why the deed was prepared in this way, but this gives you something that quite literally I've been working on the last couple of days. And so it is very, very important, and I reiterate this point, to read the deed, because it's not simply a matter of just filling out a resolution from last year and then the deed stays in the bottom drawer, no one really ever reads it, and you might have been acting in contravention of the deed for years at a time. As I say, I'll circulate the slide so you'll be able to read these particular clauses in detail, but unusually, as I say, if the list was not prepared, you've got a 99A assessment as a starting point. Thank you, Madison. A couple additional practical tips. I've already touched on these, but I wanted to give or offer these to you. These are practical issues that I have seen over time. So they're not theoretical. These have existed in clients' deeds that I have reviewed over time. I've already mentioned the power to appoint income, not at the end of the financial year, but by a certain date. Distribution to beneficiaries then living. So that casts doubt over whether a beneficiary can actually be a company, for example, because a company obviously can't live. Can that beneficiary or group of beneficiaries only be individuals, for example? The exclusion of entities where the appointer or guardian has an interest, which would be very unusual for most clients because the patriarch or matriarch of the group is also likely to be the appointer or guardian of the particular trust. I've already mentioned the trust vesting on the death of a person. The distribution to beneficiaries, but only with the consent of a certain person. What happens in the circumstances where that person has died, for example? A resolution that can only be made in writing. Income resolutions can be done either by conduct or orally by a trustee. Usually we record resolutions in writing to be prudent, but I have seen deeds that expressly require the resolution to be made in writing. I've already touched on the last couple, so I won't reiterate those particular ones. Now, I want to step you through, this is sort of my four-step process. I really, as I was thinking about this particular topic, I really wanted to try and break this down for you so practically you understand if you have a lawyer look at these things, this is likely to be what they're trying to do when they prepare the resolution for you and for your client. The first one, we've already touched on part of that so far. So reading the deed and confirming, flowing into step two, can I actually do for the client or the accountant what they would like done under the particular deed? So are there strategic issues that I need to take account of? Family law, tax law, might a certain beneficiary possibly be insolvent or subject to bankruptcy proceedings where I want to make certain I'm not distributing to them, for example? Who is and isn't entitled? Could I have a scenario where the client tells me I want to distribute to Mr. X? Mr. X is not a beneficiary, or to the X family trust, for example. The next one is actually key because this will usually trip accountants up. Are you preparing the resolution pre or post 30 June? In other words, are you preparing the resolution contemporaneously with the end of financial year? Or is what you are putting in writing actually a record of what was decided as at 30 June? They are very distinct points. So I'll just repeat that one for you to be absolutely clear. Am I, if I'm the lawyer for you, preparing the resolution contemporaneously with 30 June, or am I doing the resolution many months after the fact and then acting on what the accountant tells me was actually done at the time? Because I've seen resolutions where, for example, the client decides and then that's ultimately mistakenly given to the ATO, and then you end up with a 99A assessment, usually subject to default beneficiary clauses. You end up in a scenario where the resolution or the decision is made post 30 June. And so once you have regard to the terms of the deed, it's simply not possible to have made someone presently entitled, subject to the terms and default beneficiary clauses, as I mentioned. And lastly, and this sort of goes without saying, how does the deed actually apply to what my client wants to achieve? And so that's really step two. Step three, and I'll show you an example of this on the next slide, you'll see what I'm referring to. But the way Division 6 operates, which is our main provision in respect of taxing trusts and beneficiaries, apart from the streaming provisions, obviously, the first step is really to determine what is the income of the trust. Sometimes that might be called the profit of the trust or the distributable income of the trust. But the first question is really, what is the income of the trust and how do we determine that income? So for example, is the income of the trust defined? And we'll talk about income equalization clauses shortly. Is it defined as Section 95? Does the trustee have some sort of discretion that they can apply as to how accounts are prepared? Can costs be capitalized? Many of you would have seen what sometimes are referred to as Bamford clauses, the recharacterization of costs of income to be capital or revenue, capitalized to corpus, for example. So really my step three is I'm determining what the income of the trust is. And that will usually be based on what the accountant tells me. So there might be some interim accounts that we are working from. There might be some final accounts, depending on the time of year that we're preparing the resolution. A couple of things to flag for you at this point, and I've seen this more so in historical resolutions, a balance clause and an audit adjustment clause are no longer valid clauses for tax purposes. And briefly what they are, and I'm sure many of you will have seen them, a resolution will usually say $100 to Mary, $50 to Steve, and the balance to Mary Proprietary Limited. That's usually the bucket company. That balance clause or that waterfall methodology does not work anymore. Post the decision in Donkin, there was an AAT decision. Present entitlement, the proportions of present entitlement are fixed at the end of the relevant financial year. So balance clauses don't work anymore. Equally, audit adjustment clauses, you might have seen these as well, where the resolution will say to the effect that if the commissioner comes along, the ATO comes along and determines that further income should have been included in the net income of the trust, or certain deductions might be denied, then the effect of the commissioner's order needs to be distributed to the bucket company, for example, or to a certain person. That clause is also not valid. It may operate in a trust sense, but it does not operate as you might think it would in a tax sense. Now, number four, the net income of the trust. This is Section 95, net income. The questions that I'm thinking about when I'm working out what is the net income of the trust, ultimately, as I'm preparing that resolution, is do I want the trustee to be taxed or not? Sometimes you might actually want the trustee to be taxed, at least in part, if, for example, you've got a testamentary trust. So it may not necessarily be a bad thing. I'm also considering how the tax return might be prepared, trustee beneficiary lodgements that are required to be made with the ATO, and also any TFN withholding, for example. Included in that may also be distributions to non-residents that are taken out of the net income of the trust for Division 6 purposes. These are the sorts of things that I'm considering under step four. Now, I want to give you practically an example of what this looks like. Again, I'll circulate the slides for you. That's fine. And I've obviously cleared all the client information here. Working through those steps, what I just touched on, step one being reviewing the deed, determining what the client wants to achieve. Step three was about what is the income of the trust. And you'll see that effectively is my clause one and 1.1 on the left-hand side of the resolution there. And so what I'm doing in 1.1 is I'm actually determining, based on the deed, the trustees deciding how income of the trust should be calculated. I'm also streaming income under this resolution, and so I'm categorizing my income based on the type of income it is. So I'm categorizing and classifying capital gains and separating that out from the other income of the trust. Equally, the resolution on the right-hand side of the screen there is an interim resolution. So it's not a final resolution done at 30 June. And it only deals with, for example, the streaming of a dividend. And the streaming of a dividend under the dividend streaming rules in 207B of the 97 Tax Act.